and welcome to the Go Home Show podcast presented to you by Swerve, your one-stop shop for all things professional wrestling with weekly chats with WWE superstars, all the news you might have missed from the previous 7 days, and a look at some of the WWE Network's finest content. This week, we have upgraded, let me tell you, gentlemen. We brought some class and decorum to proceedings. Got rid of Mick, got rid of Crush, and we brought a very special guest in. Joining me and Elliot and Chris is Alex McCarthy from TalkSport. How are you, mate?
I'm good. Thank you for having me, fellas. Looking forward to chatting some wrestling with you.
Exactly, yeah. And someone that knows what they are talking about. Not that Crush doesn't, but I mean, this guy knows his stuff inside out. But we just wanted to get to know you a little bit better, Alex, if that's all right. So we wanted to start with your earliest wrestling memory.
So for me, my earliest memories of wrestling were really giving each other stunners at school and stuff, I guess. Like mucking around. And I was kind of into it around then. But then I really started watching it around the Attitude Era. So it was about late 98. And so, yeah, like Rock, Stone Cold, all those guys. How could you not love those guys? You know, it was just a glorious time in wrestling, man. So really, I think, yeah, the Monday Night Wars, although it was on a Friday over here at that time, but the Monday Night Wars were the thing that really captured me in wrestling, I would say. And weirdly enough, like my partner of watching wrestling was my gran, of all people.
Wow. Yeah. Tag team partner.
She was a big rock mark, believe it or not. So yeah, like that was just weird. Like, you know, she would tape everything for me in terms of like the pay-per-views and stuff. So I never missed a thing, man. It was great.
I got to ask, how did you manage to turn taking stunners in the playground into a wage, a salary, and getting into wrestling journalism? Because that is the absolute dream.
I gave them more than I took them. Right.
All right. Yeah. No, okay.
Okay.
Now, yeah. To be fair, it's a weird journey. Like when I did my sports journalism degree, and eventually I went and got my NCTJ as well. I didn't even think that you could parlay that into a career of writing about wrestling. That wasn't a thing. You know, like we've got Meltzer and all of those guys in the US, like in the UK, we haven't got anyone really, have we? We haven't got any kind of people that have got a history of doing that. So like the first job I had with Give Me Sport was like an NBA writer. And then I was writing about football and different stuff, but they had a WWE section on the website. And I always kind of said, I like wrestling. If there's ever anything there, I'll do it. And I think they were just like, can you just go write about the basketball, mate? But I just kind of pestered them. And then eventually, as nearly every website in the UK has kind of come to learn, there is an audience for it. Like there are a lot of fans in the UK. And when the clicks are there, people are suddenly interested. It kind of graduated from that, really. Like it then became my full role at Give Me Sport. After that, TalkSport eventually, they were looking to expand their website. Again, it wasn't a role that was already there, but they were like, we've never written about WWE, so if you want to come in and do that for us, and again, so that's how that happened, really. So everything that's happened is kind of just, I don't say by chance, but like it's just kind of built and built and built. It's the same way we've got a radio show now, because it's just how well it did on the website. So, you know, long may it continue, I hope.
Going off of that, Alex, what would you say is your highlight of your career so far?
I mean, I should think about this professionally, but like just going to WrestleManias and SummerSlams and stuff like that is probably the highlight. Like I went to the Royal Rumble this year. So I was at the Royal Rumble where Edge returned.
Oh, wow.
And I was at the WrestleMania where the Hardys returned. So like both of them were insane. I can't even put into words like the atmosphere.
Michael, who's not here today, was at that WrestleMania and he's brought it up in every single one. So the Hardys WrestleMania return we're very familiar with. I just wanted to know who's been your favourite interview so far.
Yeah, I think like if I was to think about the previous question professionally, it probably would be like one of the best interviews I've done. And I think my favourite is probably, I did like a sit down with Triple H for about 25 minutes, which like is pretty rare.
Is that intimidating?
I get more nervous just because you want it to be good. I think when you work on the circuit because of NXT and NXT UK, like now it's kind of familiar with him almost. Like it's weird how him and Shawn Michaels have become so ingrained. But like I think for that interview, just because it went so well more than anything, I had an interview with R-Truth the other week that was just like a load of fun. They're all great, but like to have a good one with such a big name like that was probably my favourite.
And then just finally, obviously you're doing so much now obviously with all the talk sports stuff, and you mentioned there was a growing scene on the wrestling side of it, but on that journalism and media side, obviously the stuff you're doing with Inside the Ropes as well, do you feel that's just going to keep on progressing and getting bigger?
Yeah, I definitely do. I think BT Sport and their deal with WWE, I think that's opened a lot of doors, like in terms of be it the coverage or giving other people access. And I think when you look at the numbers, as we just mentioned earlier, there's a lot of websites that are starting to learn that, well, hang on a minute, there's a lot of money to be made from wrestling fans. You know, they're a hardcore audience. It's quite easy to write wrestling content for a lot of people. If you just kind of aggregate the rumors, you know, the sexy news, people are down for it. So when you look at YouTube channels like, you know, WrestleTalk, I think they've got like 800,000 subscribers, something ridiculous like that. And obviously Inside the Ropes, you know, nearly 200K or something like that. There's all these different mediums now and different ways that people get stuff. I just think it is going to keep getting bigger. And I don't know if I would have said that 5 years ago. Wrestling was in almost a bit of a lull, I think, maybe 5-10 years ago. Because obviously from 20 years ago, where it was like amazing. It does feel like things have picked up again at the moment. I think that has a lot to do with the focus WWE are actually paying to the UK now with BT. I don't know if you saw this yesterday. But they're saying that they wanted to do a UK pay-per-view this year. But obviously, ultimately, it didn't come to pass because of COVID. So it seems like, because they're focusing on us more, there's more for us to go on and more for us to do.
Well, you said sexy news, Alex, so let's get into some sexy news. Let's start with Mustafa Ali. Chris, he is the leader of Retribution. Now, I'm not going to pass comment. What do you think about it?
I said this on the Raw Review Show on Tuesday morning, which you should also check out on all good podcast providers. I think this was actually a really, really good idea from WWE. Because if they had pulled the same stunt with Mustafa Ali becoming the Retribution leader in front of live crowds, it would have instantly made Retribution faces, because Mustafa Ali is that ingrained babyface that everyone wants to see do so well and everyone thinks is underused and underrated and undervalued and all this kind of stuff. The fact they were doing it in the Thunderdome meant they could keep him as a heel within the audience, within the viewers. I really like the idea. Anything that gives Mustafa Ali more TV time is something I will always be in for. I'm glad that Retribution now has like a focal point, has a leader. I'm excited to see where this goes. I'm brought back up again after feeling a little bit disengaged with it after the disqualification from the tag match a couple of weeks ago, which I'll come into later in Room 101. Don't worry, I'm throwing back to that. But yeah, no, I'm up for this. I like this.
Ida, what did you make of the timing of it?
It seemed very interesting considering the whole like promo with T-Bar a few weeks ago. Like, I thought he was the leader. I didn't feel like they were going to have someone to be the mouthpiece for them. But ultimately, I think it's a good decision because this is a dude who, if we're correct in thinking, was meant to face Daniel Bryan for the WWE title at WrestleMania last year. And obviously, injury stopped that and Kofi Mania happened and it was a great moment. But Mustafa Ali's got genuine, like, disgruntled storyline, you know, built up. There was the whole hacker storyline that was meant to be going through as well, which didn't really seem to pass. It seems like the timing is perfect to give him a little bit of a switcheroo in terms of his momentum, give him a bit more of a push. I think he's good on the mic. He's great in the ring. Considering as someone who was kind of excited initially when Retribution was being teased and everything, but has been kind of, similar to Chris, kind of a bit meh'd out by it, I think it's a great little twist. It's getting me excited for it and makes me think, ooh, they might be onto something here.
Alex, just on Retribution, we're sort of fading in and out, but obviously Mustafa Ali, but the work they're doing on Twitter seems to be dragging them back up as well.
Yeah, their Twitter game is undoubtedly, it was the best part of them for for a good couple of weeks, I think. And that takes some going when you think of the names they were given and how we all reacted to them. I'm not convinced, like, Ali was always the plan, but, like, even just the way that they're trying to put it all together now and make it make sense is bringing me back in, because a couple of weeks ago, I was like, the names are horrendous. The contract thing, I know that T-Bar tried to explain it, but it's still stupid that WWE would ever employ someone who was willingly destroying. It's just so silly. So all that aside, I've kind of turned around. I almost, I'm endeared to them now. I want to see where it's going to go, and I have high hopes for him. I would love the hacker thing to tie into it. I really would somehow. We all saw that Ali was mentioned and Gable, and I think their voices were cleared up. The distortion, it had come out that it was Ali. So, man, I'd like to see that tie up, because WWE have a habit of starting mystery angles that I'm into, but the payoff, like, 9 times out of 10 is terrible. So, you know, normally they don't have the destination in place. It'd be nice if they did this time.
Yeah, the anticipation is normally the best thing. Speaking of which, we were very eagerly excited to see the home of NXT Capital Wrestling Center. They had TakeOver, they had NXT. E-Dog, we were speaking just off air, the atmosphere in there, obviously it's not anywhere near what it's going to be, but we've sort of got a little bit of that back, haven't we?
Yeah, because for me personally, the one thing I really miss is those great TakeOver crowds and the atmosphere. It's normally the highlight of any pay-per-view weekend. And for the first time in what feels like years, it's only been, 9 months since we last had a good crowd in for NXT. It felt good. It felt genuine. Having the combination of all the screens in the background as well as a small bit of crowd there made the crowd noise not seem as you know, kind of canned laughter-esque, as we've seen in certain parts. It just builds a better atmosphere, feels a little bit more natural. I think also it kind of marks the end of an era for NXT, and we are moving into something new. The fact that we have had weekly television for so long, it seems like, all right, this is the next step in what we want NXT to become going forward. So I think it's the right decision. It's just better than what it was, you know, being in a dark, dreary room, because these guys put on amazing matches, arguably some of the best stuff on WWE week in, week out. And it's like, now it feels a lot more special.
Before we get to last night, Chris, you obviously you've broken it down already, but just a quick summary of TakeOver, it was just, yeah, it was brilliant, wasn't it?
It was, and do you know what? I won't even go through the whole show. It was, for me, this was the best 2.5 hours of wrestling that we've had, probably since the start of lockdown. It was just a really, really good, solid show. Because we have such high standards of TakeOver, sometimes it's quite often the case that you have like one banger match, a couple of good matches, and then like one or two that kind of fill out the card. This, for me, was four brilliant matches, and then the mountain peak with the main event with Kyle O'Reilly and Finn Balor. If you've not watched it yet, just go and watch it. Honestly, it's well worth 2.5 hours of your time. Obviously, the finish that we had with Finn Balor retaining in an absolute bloody mess of a match, and then Rich Holland coming out and dumping the lifeless corpse of Adam Cole over the barrier. Obviously, it's a shame with what happened last night with Rich Holland picking up what looks to be a serious injury. It's a shame that that seems to have been scuppered, I guess, for the right word. But I mean, I've said this before in the review shows, I've said it before on this show. I'm so high on Ridge Holland that for me, if he needs to take 9 months, 12 months, whatever it is to recover, it doesn't matter to me because he is that good that I will still be that excited to see him come back in whatever shape it is.
Let's pick up on that, Alex. Obviously, I woke up, saw your tweet, saw the video, and I mean, yeah, it's horrible for him, especially with, you think, what's on the horizon for him as well.
Absolutely. Like he was obviously trying to base for Oney Lorcan, and as he catches him, for whatever reason, his left leg kind of like collapses under himself. So it looks like there's going to be some serious knee damage. I spoke to some guys this morning close to it who say he's going to be out for a long time. So it seems he's already had the evaluations and stuff like that. Probably needs surgery. It just sucks because he was just primed, obviously, for the big angle and being involved with Adam Cole and whatnot. And if anyone has heard Triple H on a conference call or anything, he is super high on Ridge Holland. And a lot of the superstars are. Interestingly, Ryan Satin shared a video last week that he had done an interview at the Performance Center, and he asked Kyle O'Reilly, of all people, a year ago, who wasn't on TV at the moment, who will be the next big star in NXT, and he said Ridge Holland. So, like, a lot of the stars were high on him. If you look at him, he's $1 million too, right? Like, he's like a mini Lesnar almost. Like, the guy is phenomenal shape. So it just sucks for him, man. It seems like it could be 9 months, 12 months, who knows. But man, wish him all the best because that sucks to get an injury like that.
Well, yeah, obviously we'll send our regards here. Let's move on to the next topic and let's do what we do best on this show, some fantasy booking. We've got the draft starting on Friday. I'm saying live on air, I'm going to stay up for it, which is something I don't normally do, but I'm ready for a good time. Alex, I'll start with you. We're on the eve of the draft, but who would be your number one pick? Let's do your number one pick for SmackDown and Raw.
Whoever I am, the number one pick is the Tribal Chief. It's Roman, man. He's on fire. He's the number one player. It's got to be Roman Reigns. And I'm assuming that would be SmackDown trying to keep hold of him. Has to be Roman, man. Like, I'd like to see Rollins go over to SmackDown. And I'm assuming we're doing like a brand new draft. So Reigns, number one for SmackDown. Number one for Raw. It would be nice to have a woman maybe fill that out. And I think maybe Sasha Banks. I've kind of said this on Twitter before, that I like the idea of maybe Banks and Bayley having like a trilogy. The first one being this Friday, apparently. Yeah. I'm assuming that the second one will be Hell in a Cell, maybe. You split them up, but then the way you get them back together is Banks winning the Rumble. So I don't want to see anyone take the belt from Bayley except Sasha Banks. So for me, Roman, Sasha.
Chris, come to you next. And you, Elliot, have a little think. Any person that needs that move across?
I'm going straight back to my bold prediction. And I can't remember if I said it on this show or on a review show, but Otis Dozovich, Mr. Money in the Bank, get him away from Roman Reigns because nothing's happening there. What I want to happen, this is my dream. He goes over to Raw. Randy wins the title in some form of shenanigans at Hell in the Cell. Randy comes out. We open the show on Raw the next night. He cuts some snarky promo about how this is his destiny, how he deserves this, how he is the GOAT, all this kind of stuff. Out comes Drew McIntyre, who runs straight through Randy Orton, beats the living hell out of him, and then we get the repeat of the CM Punk, Batista, and Edge cash-in, where a lifeless Randy Orton is led in the middle of the ring. Out comes Otis, Mandy Rose in tow with the briefcase, gets the pin, and we have a new champion. The man that is Otis Dozovich is your WWE champion. That is my dream. That is my prayer. Am I hopeful for it? Absolutely not. But don't tell me it wouldn't make great TV.
As you started speaking, and I was like, this is... And then you, as you just go through it, you're like, yeah, no, I would like to see that. E-Dog, have you got anything so preposterous on top of that?
Kind of going off of on similar vein with Alex, but I want to kind of see it switched up a little bit, is I kind of want to see a repeat of when Batista and Cena switched brands with obviously Roman and Drew. I feel like that would make a very clear mark that this is a new chapter and separating the brands, obviously. Another thing, though, is kind of thinking forward when we were mentioning about Retribution is, because obviously we've got Survivor Series coming up, and I don't know if they want to do it as Retribution versus the whole of WWE, or if they want to do it as SmackDown versus Raw, maybe with NXT as well, not sure. I want Mustafa Ali to be picked, and therefore want Retribution to stay on one brand, personally, to make that distinction. Because for me, one of the struggles with the drafts in recent years is that they do it, and it's separate for a week, and then they just start crossing over again every week. Yeah. I prefer the idea where it's like, all these storylines are enclosed, there's going to be no interruption for everybody else, and that way it's just a bit more structured and doesn't feel a little bit more convoluted. So either or that way, I doubt I'm going to get either of them, but we'll have to see.
Alex, give you a chance as well. Is there anyone that you think, you know, needs that move to just to give them a bit of fresh impetus?
I think the Messiah gimmick would be quite cool on SmackDown now. Rollins has been Raw for so long, but I'd like to see Samoa Joe make the move to SmackDown and come back into the ring. And I think he's perfect for the Roman Reigns storyline that's going on right now. So I would like to see that. I mean, that's as much as me wanting to see Samoa Joe wrestle again as anything else. But
let's make it happen. Just finally on the news, Chris, just to touch upon, NXT's coming back with Halloween Havoc, October the 28th. But it's nice to see them WCW licenses being used finally.
Yeah, to be honest, this is just one of those nice little crowd pleasers that you just throw in there. It's not, doesn't need to be a full takeover or anything like that. It's just something that will make you happy. Obviously, Shotzi Blackheart has had a good little push in recent times. She's quickly becoming a crowd favourite. I think this is just, it's just a good decision. It's just, again, it's making crowds happy. It's just good TV. We've seen it a lot with AEW with their like themed shows, if that makes sense. Obviously, we had 30 years of Jericho yesterday. We've got the 1 year anniversary next week. I think this is just good, smart TV that will make people happy.
Lovely. I think we'd all agree that. Right, we are moving on to Convince Me. This is the segment, Alex, where we have a topic and we all bring something to the table. And this week we're looking at the Mount Rushmore of wrestling. Now, I think there are some names that we'd say are on there, your Stone Colds, your Rocks, your Hogans, maybe some others that we could argue about. But who is sort of underrated and maybe deserves to be on there that maybe you wouldn't think of every day? Chris, I'll start with yourself. Who have you gone for and why?
Mine is a very easy one, and it is Dusty Rhodes. Now, for me, the point of anything is legacy. You want to leave a sport, a competition, a show, whatever it is, in a better place than when you found it. Now, Dusty Rhodes, you look at all the superstars that you have in WWE and NXT these days, and they all have Dusty Rhodes' fingerprints all over them. There's a reason you have the Dusty Cup. There's a reason that all these current superstars talk so highly about Dusty, and that is because he has helped make so many superstars. You can look back to his time at WCW. You can look back at his time before what NXT became. But for me, it has to be Dusty because he is the reason that wrestling is so strong these days.
Alex, where are you taking us?
I mean, there's a lot of obvious ones, like you just said, that are springing to mind. But I think for me, I think Mick Foley deserves a spot on there. He's been the gateway for so many superstars that have become legends in this business. You could argue that Triple H, that The Rock, Edge, the guys like that, they wouldn't become who they became, Randy Orton too, without the Mick Foley feud per se. He created so many indelible moments for different superstars, sacrificed his body in a way that no one else in the business ever really has. He also has that, you know, when you look along the defining moments in the industry and certainly the Monday Night Wars, him winning that first ever world title and the famous WCW call about that, like, he does really have a legacy in the business that I think is understated because maybe he's not a five-star worker like you'll find in Japan or something. What he contributed to the business, falling from that cell, all of those crazy moments, man, like he certainly has left an imprint on the business that is felt widely, and it's far more than being what Ric Flair would have said once, a stuntman.
Definitely. E-Dog, where are you taking us?
I'm going to go with the man who won an Olympic medal with a broken freaking neck. The man, the myth, the legend, Kurt Angle. I mean, this for me was the first wrestling heel I kind of fell in love with really growing up. I loved his feuds with Eddie Guerrero and how he was this really snarky Raw GM with a broken leg. And then I actually started watching him wrestle. And oh my God, this guy was the ultimate natural talent. He was an Olympic athlete and just seemed to meld into WWE so quickly. I'm fairly sure he won the WWE title in his rookie year or within his first year within the company. There's so many wonderful moments. There's that match against Shawn Michaels at Mania. There's Milko Mania. There's I'm a Sexy Kurt. There's all these bloody amazing bits. There's playing the guitar with Steve Austin. Honestly, like, the dude was so versatile. He was so funny, but also so ruthless. Oh my God, he was just absolutely fantastic. He's in my top three of all time, and for me, doesn't get enough credit. And I've had the joy of seeing him live a couple of times, and oh, he's just fantastic.
I'm going to go for Edge. Obviously, the stuff he did with Christian speaks for itself, all those amazing TLC matches. Obviously, they were sort of the innovators of those. But I think I watched the WWE 24 recently, and that sort of period between 2005 to maybe 2008 was like probably a low point for the business in terms of people coming through the doors and people's sort of perception after the Attitude Era. So to do what he did, and I think those matches, especially with the Cena series, sort of gets so underrated. And him coming back into the business, obviously he's got another legacy hopefully to put forward as well. I just think I've sort of underrated his top tier talent, and I think he deserves to be up there, fellas. But let us know what you think at home. If you're listening to us, get us on Twitter. E-Dog, over to the quiz.
Yes, Will, this is it. This is the wrestling quiz for the week. The team will go head-to-head each week in a quick quiz format based around a specific topic. For example, the topic might be hardcore champions, and they need to say how many they can name. Almost a bidding war at a shot of naming them. Chris might say he can name 5, Will might say he names 6, Michael might say he can name 7, etc., etc. Whoever can say they've got the highest number has to say the highest number of it. Now, with the recent news on NXT that Halloween Havoc will be coming back, I've decided to bring things back a little bit old school to WCW, and I want you guys to name as many wrestlers that appeared on WCW Halloween Havoc 2000.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
There are some obvious ones in here, so I'm looking for a fairly high number because, you know, you could just look at the timeline, but come on.
I never watched WCW.
I've not watched this pay-per-view either. And there's at least 5 names you can get.
I'll up it a little bit so we don't have to spend ages on the bidding. I'll say 4.
Mm. Alex, do you reckon you can do 5?
Yeah, I'll say 5 just for the fun of it.
Will?
If Judy Bagwell's not there, I ain't got a clue. So I actually couldn't. Chris, can you do 6?
I'll go for 6, mainly because I think you've given me one just then.
Right, I'm going to say 7.
There is no way I will name 8 members of WCW's 2000 roster.
Oh, God. Okay, let's go in 3, 2, 1. Alex, go.
Oh, God, I don't even think I know matches. I'm just going with who was on the roster. So, Buff Bagwell?
Buff Bagwell, yes.
Oh, Jesus. Sting?
Sting, yes.
Jeff Jarrett?
Yep.
Goldberg?
Yes.
Mike Awesome?
Yes, Mike Awesome.
T?
Yeah, Booker T.
Scott Steiner?
Yes, Scott Steiner.
He's done it.
That's 7, he's done it.
Hey!
He's
done
it. I am.
You notice how all of them came to WWE? And I was just like,
First Mike Awesome shout we've ever had on this podcast as well.
He won the hardcore title in Madison Square Garden. That's all I can tell you about WWE, right?
I did say that there were some very obvious names, but I'll read out the whole list for you. I think there were 28 altogether, if my maths is correct. You had Mark Jindrak, you had Sean O'Hare, Billy Kidman, Rey Mysterio Jr., Reno, Sergeant AWOL, Lieutenant Loco, Corporate Cajun, or Cahoon, Sean Stasiak, Chuck Palumbo, Conan, Ty Greaves, Shane Douglas, Tori Wilson, Buff Bagwell, David Flair, Mike Sanders, Ernest Miller,
David
Mike Orson, Vampiro, General Rection, I think his name is. I'm assuming that's it. It's got a gen and a dot next to it.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, Lance Storm, Jim Duggan, Jeff Jarrett, Sting, Booker T, Scott Steiner, Goldberg, and Brian Clark.
Is that in order?
That is, yeah, that's in order of matches. Oh, and Brian Adams.
Goldberg main evented against Brian Adams. Wow.
Brian Adams and Brian Clark in a handicap elimination match. Some of the matches on here were First Blood DNA matches. It's almost like this company was going to run out of business in like 6 months.
Alex McCarthy, you are today's quiz champion. How do you feel?
It's a crowning achievement. Tell my kids when they come home from school, you wait.
Yeah, love that.
So it is that time again for Wrestling Room 101. Every week, a different member of the panel will bring with them one thing from the world of wrestling that they'd like to get rid of forever. They then present it to the group. If it enters Room 101, it's gone. If not, we have to continue living on without it. Elliot is this week banned from being a part of Room 101 as he lost last week, so he's on clock duty. Alex, as our special guest referee, you will be judging whether this topic goes into Room 101. I want a nice, clean, down-the-middle officiating. I am going to bring a topic this week, and Will, you are going to debate against me. Each segment is timed, so the opening arguments will each receive 60 seconds. Counterpoints will get up to 45 seconds, and then Alex, you have 90 seconds to make your decision. Mr. Elliot Ames, are you ready on the clock?
I am ready.
Wonderful. So, the topic I am bringing this week to Wrestling Room 101 is the ridiculous, stupid, nonsense, secret, illegal man can't hit legal man in tag team rule because, quite frankly, it is never, ever enforced unless it wants to. So, the backstory for this is, a couple of weeks ago, as I mentioned earlier in the pod, just to bring it full circle, Retribution were disqualified from a tag match against Hurt Business after Lashley had member three in the Hurt Lock, and T-Bar came and punched him in the face. That ended the match. That was it. And then we got a good old-fashioned brawl. This week in the main event, we had another six-man tag match. Drew McIntyre was laying the hurt into Randy Orton. Robert Roode, the illegal man, came in, started beating Blue Thunder out of Drew McIntyre, and the ref couldn't have given two sweet poos. Now, for me, I love tag team wrestling. We know this. All I want is consistent ruling. Either it is disqualification or it's not. Will Brazier, over to you.
Look, Chris, referees are all different. They're all, look at the Premier League. You got Mike Dean, bit of a character, throws his cards up in the air like he's Hollywood. Look on FIFA, you got Derek Milborough. He's strict. Some of the guys are less strict. Every referee is different. So you can't sort of characterise for what decisions they're going to make. Wrestling at its heart, and AEW obviously bringing that, is a sport. Everybody's different. These rules are there to be enforced, but to be enforced when they're needed. So Retribution, we need them to be bad guys. Referees coming in, I'm strict today, we're going to enforce it. And I know what you like. Obviously, you are in a tag team, so this is going to be a little bit more sort of close to heart for you, but I don't think you're looking at the wider picture. Retribution needs to be hounded as these bad guys, and that's why the rule has been enforced for them. And, you know, if Drew wants to throw a little punch in here and there, so be it.
So my issue with this is that it wasn't Drew doing the rule breaking. It was Robert Roode, self-confessed bad guy and friend to consistent number one contender, Dolph Ziggler, who will forever be the number one contender, as we discussed last week. I'm not asking for discrepancies. All I'm asking for is consistency. If the ball hits you on the sleeve of the arm, below the sleeve is handball. Those are the rules. It's very black and white. All I'm asking for is consistency. If it's just going to be a warning, let it just be a warning. We'll move on. There are 1,000 other ways to disqualify Retribution. You don't need this nonsense little rule. That is my point. I don't need 45 seconds. You can go back on the clock, Will. Prove me wrong.
One thing that we will never, ever, ever get in professional wrestling is consistency. And I am, one, a big fan of that. If they're going to enforce these rules, they're going to enforce it when and where they want them. And you keep bringing to the fact that you want consistency. I don't want my referees to be consistent. I like my Kyotas. I like, insert wrestling name referee here because I'm running out
Charles
of ideas. Charles Robinson, great bloke, great haircut. Not the point. I'm running out of ideas to say I don't need the 45 seconds because I can't fill it.
Alex, as our judge, as our special guest referee, it is over to you. What is your ruling? Is this nonsense rule going into room 101 or not? You have the floor.
I actually quite like Will's take. You know, it is wrestling, right? It's not meant to be. It's meant to be flexible and fluid. But as much as I take with that, I think the rule is stupid, man. It's stupid. Like, in theory, every pin that's ever broken up is a disqualification, right? Like, it doesn't really make sense. I'm all for, like, the rules being bent, but the rule has to be a rule. This is, like, literally something they just make out of the blue every now and again. I think they did it with Rollins as well a few months ago, where it was just ridiculous. And they were like, oh, well, what the hell's happened here? And the commentators don't even know how to really sell what's happening. Yeah, I'm sorry. It is pretty silly. It's going to have to go in the room 101, I think.
A great decision and brilliant officiating, if I may say so myself, because you were consistent. As ever, though, it is not just our decision. We hand it over to you, the Go Home Show podcast listeners. Let us know on Twitter, should this nonsense rule go into room 101? Or do we like a little bit of flavour, a little bit of differentiating from our referees? Tell us on Twitter at Go Home Show Pod, or in the comment section of our YouTube. That is Sporf Wrestling. Let us know what you think. Now it is time for the real attraction to this podcast. Elliot, I hand it over to you.
Well, as always, the champions of WWE love coming to this podcast, and we've got some more lined up for you today as the NXT Tag Team Champions themselves, Breezango, join our very own Crusher to chat things all NXT, winning their first championships in NXT, the Fashion Files, and their first impressions of each other. So without further ado, take it away, Crush.
Today, I'm delighted to be joined by two very special guests. It is the WWE NXT Tag Team Champions, Tyler Breeze and Fandango. How are you both?
Hello.
What's up, Big Mike? What's up?
Obviously, NXT on Wednesday night, we're going to see the Capital Wrestling Center. How are you feeling about that with this brand new venue that was revealed at TakeOver?
I think it looks pretty cool. It's a nice little throwback and kind of goes right along with what WWE is always doing, which is we're always evolving and we're always trying to find, especially in today's climate, what can we do? What can we, obviously we saw with everything coming out with the Thunderdome and stuff like that, it gets everybody's head thinking of, okay, well, what can we do now? What can we do now? What can we do now? So this is just kind of the next evolution in what we're doing. And I'm guessing if I was a betting man, it's probably not going to stop there. We're probably going to keep kind of rolling with, you know, hey, wait for the next thing. But for right now, I think it's awesome. I think it looks great.
And Fandango, how good is it to see some sort of fans back in wrestling arenas as well?
Oh, I'm excited, man. We were just talking earlier about how it's hard to get in, you know, to get really amped up for these matches with, you know, not a lot of noise out there. And a lot of what we do is, did the fans like it? Did they, you know, do they bite on that? So it's kind of, you know, it's like kind of like being a comedian where you go out and you do your shtick and the fans tell you if, you know, if it's good or not. So we've been kind of, you know, we haven't had that over the last few months, so I'm excited to get back out there and, you know, get a little bit of noise coming in.
And then obviously on TakeOver 30 became number one contenders, and then on the 26th of August, you were crowned the new NXT Tag Team Championship. A question for you both, but starting with you, Fandango, what does it mean to win your first title in WWE after all the years of training, all the hard work, the injuries and stuff like that?
It was really emotional for me, and I'm glad I get to do it with Breeze because, you know, he's been with me over the 4 or 5 years now. He's been with me ups and downs, injuries. It's as corny as it sounds. It's just if you keep working hard and stay consistent and pushing towards that a common goal, eventually it will pay off, and management sees that. And that's what happened with us. We just, you know, we got through a bunch of obstacles, and I came back from another injury, and then we pushed through, and then, you know, we ended up getting it. We won. So it was great.
I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, how many times, like we've talked about being the almost guys several times where it's like, you know, we get right there and then we go away. Then we get right there, we go away. And they just, you never really kind of pull the trigger on it. And I think it's one of those things where, you know, we were singles competitors for a long time, and, you know, same type of thing. You almost get there. You never quite get there. They say that like, it's lonely at the top kind of thing. Once you get there, it really isn't when you're in a tag team. So the fact that like Dango said, we got to do this together. And I think we've been a tag team for like 5 years now, and through a bunch of injuries and, you know, being on Raw, being on SmackDown, being on NXT, we've jumped around a lot and we've dealt with a lot of different stuff, and we've kind of even almost rebranded even to where what you see on the Fashion Files never really had kind of that killer instinct to it. Where now, you know, watch our matches and it's a very different, or at least you're seeing for the first time that exists with that personality as well. So it's kind of cool. It's I want to, like, it just makes everything worth it, essentially.
And throwing it back to the start of your both careers, Tyler, I read in an interview you were talking about when you first met Fandango down in FCW. Can you talk about what your first impressions were of each other?
Well, so Daniel, we're probably totally, this is so funny. It's probably totally separate. So when I got to FCW, Dango was the man, essentially. He was like, obviously, you know, we are very similar, but also very different.
Especially I was like the Matthew McConaughey of developmental, you know,
a little bit.
I've been there like 15 years.
Yeah.
I'm the old guy, you know, like the old college guy showing up to the high school parties, you know.
But he was cool, man. He was cool. So like I ended up meeting him, thought he was the coolest dude. I was literally like, this is what a professional wrestler is, like this guy right here. He kind of, you know, I believe even at that time, I think he was already kind of on the main roster, so I wasn't really, you know, on the same brand as him. It wouldn't be until years later when finally I was kind of coming up. And then I think he said, like, we were always cool and everything, but he kind of said like, oh, I think we're going to be a tag team. And initially I did not want to be a tag team because I was kind of like liking what I was doing and I was kind of in the groove of everything and whatever. And as soon as we kind of saw what we could be together, that immediately went like, nope, I'm good. Like, this is great. And we started off, even like our early stuff tagging together was very fun. And the second that we branched into doing, you know, some comedy stuff with R-Truth and Goldust, I believe, I was dying. Like everything we did, I was dying laughing. And everything that he said, I would just go like, where are you thinking of this stuff? Like, this is great. And that just kind of even got more and more as we did Fashion Files. I would just, we would literally just look at each other and burst out laughing. And I go, what are we doing? Like, this is insane to me. And even now, like, as we come back here, I'm like, man, like these matches that we're having are fun. Like, we are having fun. You know, the fact that we ended up getting tagged together, I was very dumb at the beginning for not wanting to do it, but I love that how it's all turned out.
Thought he had a lot of talent. He came up and started working with Ziggler, I think, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Then you stole my valet, Summer Rae, didn't you?
I did.
Didn't you steal her?
Yeah, she was with me.
So I was actually kind of happy that he did that. But no, that I think spring of 2016, we were coming back from a Europe tour, actually. And then somebody told me, hey, we're going to tag you up with Breeze. So I remember going up to him in catering and be like, hey, we're going to tag. And you're like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
And then we worked a little program with Goldust and Truth, right?
Do you remember? Cause before that, they were the first, I think that was how we got together, was with Goldust and Truth.
Well, I tagged with Goldust and you tagged with Truth, right?
Yeah.
And then we turned on.
Yeah.
Just picking up on the point you mentioned about Fashion Files, before you started that, did you ever think it'd be so popular with the WWE universe?
I didn't. Some weeks we'd get to TV and have these, like, you know, scripts. Like, essentially, I wasn't really a wrestler anymore. I was rehearsing lines every morning and trying to remember and just thinking, I don't know if this is really good or really bad, but we're going to make the best of it. But it was cool because it's like anything. The more you get in the ring, the better you get as a wrestler. And the more you get an opportunity to speak or cut promos, the better you're going to get at it. So at that time, Breeze and I were really cutting a lot of promos. So it was fun. And we were getting really good at it. And I was surprised that a lot of outside media picked up some of the stuff we did. Like, what was it, Breeze, we did? Some of those
Twin Peaks
got a ton of attention. Stuff like that, yeah.
So this whole thing started just because we were kind of, you know, off to the side, not really doing much. I think Dango had his either elbow scoped or knee scoped or something real quick. You were only out for like 2 or 3 weeks. So I said, hey, you want to do these like these little like .com kind of vignettes and stuff? And he said, yeah. And so like we just kind of did them on our own. And then someone said, hey, why aren't these on SmackDown? I said, I don't know. Like, why aren't they? So they put them on there. And I would have never guessed in a million years that, like, they gained as much traction as they did, but they would hand us, you know, what we were going to do, or at least the idea of what it was, because a little known fact about Dango, as much as he says he's looking over, you know, lines and everything else, he doesn't remember a whole lot of them, but everything, but everything he says is gold. So as long as this is what happens, we both start off here and he'll start veering off over here. And as long as I, you know, kind of ping pong him back to where we're supposed to be, the stuff that happens is why we start burst out. Yeah. We just start laughing because he just, I don't know where it comes from, but it all just, the writing was really solid. And the, you know, the, just the comedic, I guess, chemistry of me and you and the random crap that you would say that was so
I personally feel like promos and any backstage, I think it's good to get where you need to get, but let a lot of it be organic, you know. I feel like for me, if I just try to remember a piece of paper with words on it, it's going to sound regurgitated. So I don't know, I try not to remember too much because I can't, but if we got to get our point across, I think it sounds more organic and real if we're just kind of having a conversation, you know.
I would always laugh too, because you would just,
that's
like,
my excuse for not having a memory. So
I would laugh, like we'd cut and we would all burst out laughing, and then Dango, like, dead serious, would just be like, I don't know if that was good or not. And I was like, that was great. Like, how do you not know everybody in the room is laughing? How do you question this?
That was excellent stuff. You can watch the full interview on our YouTube channel, Sport Wrestling, and you can listen to it on all good podcasting apps. Let us know on Twitter at Go Home Show Podcast for who you'd like us to interview next.
Hell in the Cell is only a couple of weeks away, so it's time to stock up on your drinks for watching at home or in the Thunderdome. And how better to enjoy watching along than with the company of some fresh and delicious beer from all over the globe? There's no need to worry about heading to the shops to stock up. Beer 52 will bring the beer to you. They're offering a free case of 8 craft beers, sourced and curated from the best brewers on the planet. All you need to do is go to beer52.com/thegohomeshow and cover the $5.95 for postage. Each case is delivered direct to your doorstep. So no need to leave the house. Looking to stock up? Now's your chance. Beer 52 is the world's most popular craft beer discovery club with over 150,000 members. That's nearly the same as Retribution. They send them a brand new case every month. Each month's case has a different theme. Past themes have included New Zealand, South Africa, Korea, and all over the USA and Europe. So that's beer52.com. That's the word beer, then the numbers 52.com/thegohomeshow for free. Yes, free beers. Right, new segment. We are inundated with new content on the network each week. I, for one, am a fan of it. I love my long-form documentaries. And this week there was the, I'm going to put it in my top three network shows of all time, Drew McIntyre's WWE 24. I just thought it was absolutely brilliant. I learned a lot of things that I didn't know about Drew. It made me love him a little bit more. So, Alex, what did you make of it?
I thought it was fantastic, man. Like, WWE are just the best at that sort of production and getting all that across. And I think, you know, like when it comes to Drew and his family and kind of opening up that door, Drew has got a really special story, which, like, if you know it, it's kind of done at this point. But there's a lot of people that haven't really experienced the highs and lows that Drew had, and kind of really the 180 the experience to get back to WWE. Because when he left, I don't think people really realized this, that, like, look at his body for one, right? That transformation that he underwent to get back. I remember speaking to Diamond Dallas Page once, and he said that once Drew drove from where he lives in Tampa to DDP in Atlanta, 7 hours each way this is. He went there, he did 2 workouts with him, watched DDP's new film, and drove back home in the same day. This is on a day off from WWE, he did that. So if you had any doubts what a hard worker Drew McIntyre is, like, it's insane, and he deserves all of the great things that are happening to him for my liking. And this documentary shows it perfectly well.
Chris, we learned some things, well, I certainly did, around, I didn't realise how much of an impact he had in the initial stages of ICW.
Yeah, I think it's one of those, because he's been around for so long at WWE, we forget how instrumental he was in the early days, especially within Scottish wrestling, and it's very, very easy to overlook that. But then also, like I said, when he gets released, and as soon as he can, he's straight back there to again, essentially start working again and helping Scottish and British wrestling out as much as he can do. It for me, as someone who wrestles in England or in Britain, it's incredibly inspiring, impressive. I think there's a lot of people who owe a lot to Drew McIntyre that they don't realize, just because he's been a WWE guy for so long, when you think about how long ago it was he was the chosen one. But there's a whole story before that, which you get to see. And I think it's brilliantly told. And yeah, I learned a lot, not just about before his time in WWE, but especially in that kind of the downward period before he was released. There's a lot of stuff that I didn't know or didn't realize, when actually, as you said, you just look at body transformation and stuff like that, you can see where he went to and then where he came from as he made his return.
E-Dog, it was about the time that we actually started going to wrestling together, wasn't it? Watching them WCPW shows. And what it made me think is, like, you don't realise at the time when you're watching him in the bowler centre in Manchester, in a, it's a nice arena, but it's not the best, that he's on the road to facing Lesnar at WrestleMania.
If you'd have told me that Drew Galloway and Drew McIntyre were the same person, as someone who was not as well informed at the time, can you really blame me for not thinking they were the same person? They're completely different characters, and he just has a completely different demeanour to him. I mean, the transformation this guy had on that run in the indie circuit post being released from WWE is absolutely astounding. I mean, he won everything. He won virtually every world title outside of the company and was putting on absolute spectacles, whether it be, as they say in the documentary, in front of a couple dozen people or tens of thousands of people across these indie shows, giving absolute amazing matches everywhere he went. And I can't say I was that surprised when he eventually did get re-signed, because he just became the king of independent wrestling very quickly, it almost felt. It just felt like a natural fit for him.
Alex, just finally to wrap up, obviously he's got a big match against Randy Orton coming up. Where do you see his title run going?
Yeah, this is always a tough one, right? Like, I feel like he's been given a strong run thus far. Like, you'll see me tweet this periodically, but I think Drew McIntyre on pay-per-view has not missed. Like, he, every time he's defended his WWE title since winning it at WrestleMania, he has delivered a classic. Even with Dolph Ziggler, where you know Dolph Ziggler's not going to win it, and I sense this is something dear to all of your hearts. Like, you know he's not going to win it. You can always see the result, but they still kind of get you engrossed and gripped, and you put on a great match. So I think Drew is, whenever he does drop the title, he's already solidified himself as a top-tier player. He's not going to, like, and I love Kofi Kingston, but it's not going to be like, that's his reign, oh, and back down you go. Like, I feel like Drew is kind of going to hang around as a main event player now. Do I want to see him drop it to Randy? Not really. I can't, if he had lost it to Randy at SummerSlam, I would have kind of been okay with it. But I don't know. You know, they're dragging it on now. I don't really know. For me, I'd like, until there's like someone who's red hot to take it off him, I don't see the need. So I'd like to see it, extend it, maybe even carry it to the next Mania. It would probably be the Lesnar rematch.
I've got to dive in here. Obviously, Otis Dozovic is red hot enough to take the title off of him. Thank you very much. I want to ask very, very quickly, though, not because I was stalking you pre-show to find out more about yourself. Your Twitter cover photo interviewing Drew, what was he like? What is he like outside of the WWE, if that makes sense?
He's great. Drew is probably someone I speak to, like, the most, in terms of, you know, not like insider stuff or anything. I just mean in general, like, you know, he's quite friendly with a lot of journalists in the UK, just because he's very giving. Like, if I ever say to him, will you come on my show, he'll work it out. He'll speak to WWE and make it happen and stuff. So he's one of the hardest working guys, as I said earlier, you can imagine. Really humble, just a really cool guy. But essentially, like, and this is always kind of gets me sometimes. So, like, obviously we can sit here and talk about wrestling and, you know, be a bit nerdish or whatever. Well, he's like that, but he's like 6'6" and massive. So, like, you almost don't expect it. But he really is just a nice kind of goofy guy. That's his personality. And I feel like he's been more like that in 2020. And that's kind of what's endeared him to people, where he'd been this kind of, well, they used to call him the Scottish psychopath, really. And he's not that. Do you know what I mean? That's just not who he is. So I feel like he really does care about, like, the UK scene, and that goes from other wrestlers to promotions to writers, to all of it. Like, I know one of the last things he did say to me is that he's so desperate to bring a pay-per-view back here.
We're all hoping for, we all want it. COVID can take a bump in the next year, and let's get some pay-per-views back over here. That is all we have time for this week. Thank you so, so much to Alex McCarthy for joining us. Who, in your opinion, should have gone into wrestling's Mount Rushmore? Could you have beaten Alex in the quiz? Probably not. It was 2000's WCW roster. It was a tricky one this week. Should the stupid secret tag team rule go into room 101? and who should we interview next in upcoming episodes. Don't forget, we've teamed up with WWE Euroshop for that incredible prize bundle, which includes a Brahma Bull mini title, a Drew McIntyre t-shirt, a Bayley t-shirt, and an undisputed water bottle. All you have to do to enter the contest is leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, stick your Twitter handle in there, and we will draw that competition very, very soon. That is all we have time for. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Alex again. We hope you've enjoyed your time with us. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast on all your favorite podcasting apps so that you are the first to know when a new episode launches. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, as we said, make sure you leave us a review. We'd love to know what you think. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at GoHomeShowPod. And Alex, where can we find you on socials?
So AlexM_TalkSport is where you'll find me on Twitter and Instagram, but don't bother about Instagram, it's boring.
Check out the full interview with Breezango on our YouTube, Sport Wrestling with our very own Crusher. And we'll be back with our NXT UK review show tomorrow with the SmackDown review on Saturday morning. That is it from us. We'll see you soon. Now let's go home.